This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, I'm Paul Sinclair. The time is 3:30 and you're listening to EN4 News. Coming up on the programme today, we visit the National Museum of Scotland in Edinburgh, who are holding a Burns-themed event today for people living with dementia as part of a monthly programme to help those with the illness enjoy a social experience in a safe environment. With the proposed closure of high street entertainment chain HMV, we ask, is high street shopping becoming a thing of the past? And Luke Barry joins us with today's latest news. But first, it's been a tumultuous week in Parliament, with the path forward on Brexit seemingly more uncertain than ever. Our political reporter, Ellen Beaton, recaps the dramatic events and asks, what's next?
We've got so far. We're nearly there and we must not give up now. Because
it would normally be front page news. Boris Johnson making an intervention into the Brexit debate this afternoon, something that many people are seeing as a leadership bid. But after the week we've just seen in Westminster, Johnson's comments are just part of the noise. To recap then, on Tuesday night the Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal, something the government have been working on for almost 2 years, got rejected by historic margins in Parliament. Then, on Wednesday, May narrowly survives a no-confidence vote that would have seen her go down. What comes next is a question nobody can answer. The Prime Minister began holding talks with leading opposition MPs as she tries to figure out how she can get a parliamentary majority for her deal. In the meanwhile, the PM will be talking to EU figures, hoping for concessions. One of the first politicians to meet with her was Ian Blackford, the Westminster leader for the SNP.
I've expressed that we are prepared to enter into talks. I think that is the right thing to do. However, in doing that, it has to be clear that the extension of Article 50, that trying to seek to remove no deal as an option, and the people's vote have got to be on the agenda.
Those options Blackford mentions are controversial issues across all the parties. After rejecting May's deal, the remaining likely options are as follows. A revised deal brought by the Prime Minister at the end of this month, a no deal as Britain leaves the EU having not secured a deal, or another referendum. The prospect of no deal has people worried, but to those who support Theresa May, it's the opposition who have now made it more likely. Colin Clark is a leading Conservative MP. He voted with the Prime Minister and says stopping a no deal is his priority too.
It's very simple. The best way to rule out a no deal and the things they're concerned about is to support the deal.
Clark says that although the SNP are putting forward these options, they cannot be trusted.
Since Ian Blackford walked out of the chamber, they have done everything they can to frustrate the relationship between the Scottish Government and Westminster. The SNP do not respect referendums.
Blackford rejects these comments and instead says the focus should be on cancelling or extending Article 50 to make sure that no deal just can't happen.
You know, I have to say to Colin Clark that that's beneath contempt. So what is next, what is important is that we've got to stop that, we've got to take that risk away. I think the sensible thing, given the chaos that there is there and given that Parliament hasn't been able to support the government in the deal that they've brought forward, is that we simply put this back to the people.
The notion of a second referendum or a people's vote is popular amongst supporters of the Lib Dems, the SNP and Labour. But without a majority of Parliament backing it, then it can't happen either. Even if it did, says the Prime Minister's office, there wouldn't be time for it. This is something that Blackford and others hotly contest.
That's just insulting to people, frankly, because it's just nonsense. And I think the Prime Minister's office are really treating people like fools.
Meanwhile, the Prime Minister has scheduled another vote on her deal for the 29th of January. Will this time be different? Colin Clark.
If we can find a way to accommodate the DUP, I believe the majority of the Conservative Party will fall in line and be able to support it.
Either way, the clock is still ticking for Britain to leave the European Union in 70 days. Ellen Beaton, EN4 News.
And Scott Hope spoke to Sir John Curtis, Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde and one of the nation's foremost pollsters, to seek his expertise on all the developments.
Hi, Professor Curtis. The main question we really just wanted to ask you is, you know, we've seen all the events of this week. What's really reflected in the polling? You know, how are the public taking all this news?
We know now from the polling that was done really beforehand that Mrs May's deal was not very popular. Not only was it unpopular amongst Remain voters, which perhaps you may not be surprised at, given that Remain voters would, many of them prefer to stay inside the European Union, but also was relatively unpopular amongst Leave voters. And therefore, when polls asked people whether they supported or opposed the deal, twice as many people said they were opposed as in favour. And equally, when they were asked, well, what do you think you MPs should do? Again, the polling was indicating that a majority were in favour. Now, that's not to deny, indeed, and there has been some polling on this that suggests that, you know, people are not necessarily that well enamoured about how politicians have handled this, and that after 2.5 years, we've come to a situation where we have a deal where which people didn't feel that they were able to endorse or an MP should endorse.
Well, more regionally then, do you think that this will increase appetite for any sort of constitutional changes with regard to independence?
Well, I think that, I mean, Nicola Sturgeon made it clear after the vote that she is indeed minded to announce what she wants, thinks should happen to a second independence referendum sooner rather than later, and that perhaps she is no longer going to wait for the end of the Brexit process, doubtless reckoning that the end of the Brexit process may now be quite some way off. However, if we have a general election, and in that general election, maybe the SNP emerge as the kingmaker in much the same way as the DUP are the kingmakers in the current parliament, then maybe they'll end up finding themselves in a position to indeed put pressure on perhaps a minority Labour administration and thereby opening up the pathway. Now, we won't know for a while whether or not you're going to get precipitated into a general election, but I think the advice to Nicola Sturgeon would be to stay your hand for a while, because you do not as yet know what opportunities are going to come before you.
Thanks for that, Scott. 850,000 people are currently living with dementia in the UK, with figures set to rise. Numbers are set to reach over 1 million by 2025. But what's being done to try and help these people living with the illness? The National Museum of Scotland is doing something to help, and David Paul went along to find out how.
As Lucy Neville's Scottish brogue rings out across the room, it's nice to see everyone joining in on the fun, myself included. I was part of a group of people who live with dementia and their carers at a social event organised by the National Museum of Scotland. The event is part of a coalition of institutions around Edinburgh, including the Scottish Galleries, that work to support people living with dementia and to help them not only to get out of the house, but also to learn a little as well. Today's theme was Robbie Burns, in celebration of his works before Burns Night on the 25th of January. Many studies have been shown that cognitive stimulation can really help people that live with dementia and help them to get on easier with their condition. Plus, there's the bonus of socialising with friends.
You get to know one another and support one another to a certain extent.
It tends to be more or less the same crowd every month. Well, it's always nice to catch up with people and sit and have a cup of tea and a blather and then find out what the event's about.
The people I spoke to really enjoyed the morning, as did I. Events like these seem to be a really important thing for people.
A lot of it is about maintaining your sort of social life, your social contacts, making friends.
Jane Miller, the Community Engagement Manager at the museum, spoke to me about these events.
So the museum socials are for people living with dementia and their carers, and they are regular monthly events which look at different topics every time, different themes. It's really about telling people about our objects and our collections and people learning new things about new different topics.
To really understand their importance, you need to better understand what the illness is. Julia McKenzie, dementia link worker at Alzheimer's Scotland, explained the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's, terms that often get confused.
Dementia is an umbrella term. It's reckoned that there's about 100 different types of dementia, but obviously people are more aware of Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. That's what the majority of people get diagnosed with.
Dealing with dementia must be a scary experience. And apart from these social events, what else is being done to help?
Having people take part in activities, be that activities that they did previously or new activities, and we will encourage them to do that. So one of our roles is to make sure that we can find things in the community that people can be part of.
So the problem of dementia is serious, and it's growing across the UK. But it's really positive to see people like Jane Miller and the National Museum of Scotland making an effort to help. I hope it can continue for many years to come.
David Paul there. Now this week alone, HMV are facing an uncertain future. Marks and Spencers have announced they're closing 17 stores, and Craft Store Paper Chase have also announced they're in a state of administration. and a shopping centre in Kirkcaldy is being auctioned for £1. After low shopping footfall over Christmas, 164,000 jobs are facing the axe and some employees have begun 2019 unsure of the year ahead. This morning, Daisy Smith was out and about in Edinburgh observing the state of the High Street.
I'm walking down Princes Street, the busiest street in Edinburgh, on a chilly January morning, and there are people passing quickly, but very few appear to be actually in the shops. Even window shopping doesn't seem to be on the agenda, and peering in the windows, staff appear to be sorting out an abundance of sales racks. Am I witnessing the decline of the High Street right here, right now? Only 18 days into 2019 and there has been an abundance of high street closures and expected job losses. Some of the latest being HMV and Marks and Spencers. HMV announced they had gone into administration a mere 3 days after Christmas. The entertainment store's administrators, KPMG, have said that they have received several bids and are evaluating their options to best secure their future and over 2,000 jobs in the next few days. Paul Clooney, manager of Ocean Terminal HMV, said...
It's difficult, and having gone through a bit in the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks where it was a very quiet Christmas, we kind of thought that it was a bit scary, but obviously you have your own sort of professionalism and you obviously want your shop all the time to look as good as it is and do as well as it is. But then obviously we were told that the company was going into administration. You try and work out what information you could take from above, which is true. I think HMV will survive in some form, but I think we'll see other closures on the high street.
HMV have been struggling to compete with the rise of streaming and online shopping, but they're not the only ones to be hit. A number of high street stores are being hit by the web taking over, with 1 in 3 non-food units bought online, and employees are feeling fearful over job losses.
Hi, would you like a bag?
Georgia Alcorlon, a customer service assistant at Sainsbury's, has felt a hit over Christmas.
Unfortunately, the high street is dead because everything is online nowadays.
It makes me feel nervous because I haven't got much job security and Sainsbury's owns Argos and Argos had a really hard time over Christmas, so it makes me fear for my job.
Today it was announced that a shopping centre in Kirkcaldy is to be auctioned with a starting price of £1, as many of its stores remain vacant, and this is becoming a recurring issue. Neil Findlay, MSP, commented.
You see some towns where huge numbers of shops in the town centres have been closed down, or the shops that are there have changed dramatically and changing the nature and the feel of the place. I think it would be a huge loss. It's quite sad because shops like HMV, I mean, these are part of our culture, they're part of our history.
The future of the High Street remains bleak, with both stores and jobs in a state of uncertainty.
Daisy Smith reporting there. Now it's over to Luke Barry with a look at today's news. Luke?
Three men have been sentenced to life after murdering 5 people in Leicester. Aram Kurd, Hawker Hassan and Arkan Ali blew up a shop on Hinckley Road in the city in a 300,000 insurance scam in February 2018. The trio set 26 litres of petrol alight, which exploded the shop as well as a supermarket and a flat. Kurd and Ali must serve a minimum of 38 years, whilst Hassan must serve at least 33. Amongst those killed in the explosion was John and Joe Reek's daughter, Leah.
I don't think you ever get over.
No.
It's still not real, if you know what I mean. We know she's gone, but to see her walk out of the house and never ever see her again.
Yeah. It hurts all the time, don't it?
Yeah.
Norfolk County Council have made steps to improve the safety of the stretch of road where the Duke of Edinburgh crashed his car yesterday. Prince Philip's Land Rover was seen careering across the road before landing on its side on the A149 near Sandringham. The Duke avoided serious injuries along with a 9-month-old baby in a Kia, but the 2 female passengers travelling with the child sustained minor injuries. Speed cameras and a reduced limit from 60 to 50 miles an hour will be introduced after a long-awaited meeting that had coincidentally been scheduled for this morning. Norfolk Councillor Terry Jeremy is hopeful that something positive can now emerge from yesterday's accident.
Hopefully something good may come from this, that we actually now take a more serious look at safety issues on Norfolk roads. We've had seen cutbacks to safety issues and maintenance and transport issues generally in Norfolk, but it remains a concern and it has been for several years.
A local man who was found dead on the Edinburgh City bypass yesterday morning has been officially identified as 37-year-old Craig Bruce from Bilston. He was found dead on the central reservation near the Sheriff Hall roundabout at 8:20 a.m. Dairy company Muir has confirmed that one of its vans was involved in the incident and said it was providing support to Police Scotland while passing on their condolences to the victim's family. Anyone with any further information is urged to contact the police. The parents of 2-year-old toddler, Lauren Wade, who died 3 years ago of malnutrition, have been jailed for a total of 13 years. Margaret Wade and Marie Sweeney have admitted to the deliberate neglect of their daughter between June 2014 and March 2015. The toddler was found to be unresponsive at the family's flat in Glasgow in March 2015 and was rushed to hospital, but died about 30 minutes later. And there is concern for a missing man who was last seen getting on a train to Edinburgh yesterday. 56-year-old Gordon Cocker left his home on Thursday morning before boarding the train from Darlington to Edinburgh Waverley. However, he missed his destination and was reported missing last night. Gordon is described as being 6'4" tall and of proportionate build. He has short, grey, receding hair and wears glasses.
Thanks for that, Luke. Still to come, our resident Norwegians Sebastian and Constance take on Brexit and the comparisons between the UK's situation and Norway's EEA deal. We look at why Scottish tenants are losing their deposits on rented property and what can be done to secure a fair and impartial scheme to prevent the public losing money unfairly. And Paige Beresford will be here with all the week's sporting highlights. Now, Brexit conversations are ongoing and the government is still exploring the different potential models, including the Norwegians' EEA deal. Norway voted against being in the EU twice, once in 1972 and then again in 1994. Today, our resident Norwegians on the team, Constance and Sebastian, take a look at the relationship their nation has with the EU and how a similar model could be a possible solution for a softer take on Brexit.
That makes me feel like I'm right back home in Norway, Constance.
Yeah, and yoking really puts bagpipes to shame, to be quite rude.
Definitely.
Now let's put on some Edvard Grieg and get down to business. There we go. So, Seb, the spotlight is officially and finally on Norway.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of you might not know this, but as soon as Norway's mentioned in anything...
We get hyped up.
We get very hyped up. It's actually kind of embarrassing. But do you actually know why I brought you here today?
I can imagine it's not going to be that fun.
No, you're actually right, Seb. That's amazing. The Norwegian Plus model is back on the table. They're dragging us into this now.
Okay, so I'm just going to leave right now.
No. Now that Seb's back, let's just start over. So this soft Brexit basically just means that they're copying our model. As you know, but many Brits don't actually know, Norway is not a part of the European Union. Nor are we Sweden, thank you very much. But we do have access to the block single market through our membership with the European Free Trade Association, the EFTA, and European Economic Area, the EEA. You knew that, right, Seb?
Of course I knew it, but you might need to explain it to the younger audience.
Yes, of course. So this means that goods or toys, services and people, mummies and daddies, can move from the EU into Norway and vice versa, so the same would go for the UK.
But I thought one of the reasons the Brits wanted to leave the EU was to trade their toys, goods, on their own terms. At least that's what Theresa May said.
I'm not getting into what Theresa said and didn't say.
Breed-ish.
So Britain will continue to abide by the four EU freedoms, like I mentioned, free movement of goods, people, services, and capital. And get this, this is why I don't get why they would want this. They will have no decision-making power in Brussels.
So you're saying that power-hungry Britain is going to follow rules but not be able to change them? Why would they want to leave the EU in the first place then?
That's actually exactly what our Prime Minister Erna Solberg also said. Us Norwegians, we're a small country. We're used to being bullied around by bigger countries like America, Ukraine, and so on. However, Britain is not. But I think one of the reasons they want this soft Brexit is because the EEA would cost less than what Britain currently pays the EU member.
Yeah, so it's all about the money.
No, Brexit is obviously all about the fun, Seb.
So it's all about freedom.
If you start quoting Braveheart again, I swear to God, we're never going to get through this.
But I'm still not buying it, though. Like, what are the pros?
Well, it would take Britain out of the EU's controversial common agriculture policy and the common fisheries policy.
Sorry, you could just repeat that?
It basically just means that they will no longer need to abide by the rules laid out in this policy, such as fishing quotas. Oh, and also, the UK would be free from the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice, but they would have to follow the rules by the EEA-owned court like we do, but they're not forced to follow them to the letter. It's not as strict as the EU court.
That is super interesting.
Thank you so much, Seb. Anyway, we, and when I say we, I obviously have the power to speak on behalf of Norway, we do not want the UK to join if this is just temporarily. We don't want this back and forth thing. And to be quite honest, we actually don't want you at all. I think I speak on behalf of Iceland, Liebeschen, and Norway to just say, if you would kindly get lost, we're not a rebound.
Yeah, can't they just figure it out by themselves and let us go back to skiing and yoking?
I thought you'd never ask, Seb.
Thank you to Sebastian and Constance there. Now, over Christmas, tenancy deposit schemes in Scotland were reviewed for the first time in 7 years. They found that nearly one in five renters in Scotland failed to protect their deposits despite government schemes set up to protect their money. Emer Harrison, who's been looking into this issue for us, joins me now. Emer, can you tell me a bit more about it?
Yeah, so there are several deposit schemes in place that are enforced by the Scottish Government. And since they were rolled out in 2011, this review is the first thorough report into the effectiveness of the schemes. It found that one in three tenants did not receive their deposit back in full, and in some cases, not at all.
So why is this happening?
Well, this is for a number of reasons, mainly cleanliness and the state of a flat is left in after tenancy ends. I spoke with Edinburgh resident Courtney Ray, who had money deducted from her deposit because of what she described as small things. She said that although she was protected as part of the scheme, the ins and outs were not made clear.
If I was going to like raise it, I'd like to know who I could go to, because that wasn't made clear when we like signed the contract and all that. They just said that your deposit was safe with this like scheme, but didn't really go into detail about it. They were more into detail about like payments, like your rent and all the stuff about the flat rather than the actual deposit.
It's clear that more education and support is needed alongside the scheme, in particular with students who are more likely to have issues with full deposit repayment. Andy Whitman, a Green MSP who sits on the local government committee, suggested it might not be entirely down to the scheme itself.
Whether failings that have been perceived are actually failings due to the structure of the scheme, or whether there's bad actors involved, whether the landlords are pulling a fast one and we need to find a way to make sure they don't behave badly, and that would be tougher sanctions.
Regardless, more needs to be done to ensure that both tenants are aware of the details of the schemes and landlords are enforcing it correctly.
Thank you for that, Emer.
Now, the latest sport highlights on Radio Energy.
Top flight managers and officials in Scottish football have backed the introduction of video assistant referee technology, known as VAR, following a summit on Thursday. The meeting was hosted by the Scottish Football Association in Perth, where Andrew Dallas, Kevin Clancy and John Beaton represented the views of the referees. Hearts manager Craig Levine said that the technology was crucial to helping officials make the right calls.
I think the big thing to come out of it for me was that VAR's necessary for a number of different reasons. And I'm hopeful that it'll take the pressure off of the referees, and I'm sure that they would agree with that, and will increase the amount of right decisions that are made. So for me, it's a no-brainer.
The introduction of VAR, which allows dedicated video referees to review footage of key incidents before advising the match referee of the outcome, comes at a cost and also has a training period of 12 months. Hibernian boss Neil Lennon said that all the top flight managers agreed that VAR would be beneficial.
The referees brought up the fact that VAR would be far more productive and beneficial for them, and then it was thrown out to the managers, and you know, they were unanimous in saying that VAR would be, you know, welcome into the game here.
No decision has been made yet. Delegates discussed the possibility of appointing full-time referees and numerous other issues around the SFA's new disciplinary procedure, which has recently faced heavy criticism. Also in Scottish football, Rangers return from the winter break with a trip to Central Park tonight, where they will face on League Two team Cowdenbeath in a Scottish Cup fourth round tie. Cowdenbeath manager Gary Bolan is optimistic ahead of the match.
We've got Rangers at home, it's a big tie. You know, and the players, they're more than capable of going and challenging in the league we are. There's some good players in there that have played at a higher level. You know, and I'm happy with the progress we're making.
In tennis, Rafael Nadal made an impressive statement today by beating teenager Alex de Minaur in a little over 2 hours in the Australian Open. He won in straight sets 6-1, 6-2 and 6-4. In rugby, Edinburgh go with an unchanged lineup against Montpellier tonight at Murrayfield as they aim to land a place in the quarter-final at home in the Champions Cup. Edinburgh head coach Richard Cockerill understands the pressure of the game.
We're playing for big stakes here. We're playing for home quarter-finals. We're playing for qualify for Europe. We win, we get us through, and Glasgow through on the same night.
Back to you, Paul.
Thanks for that, Paige. And finally, a film adaptation of the life of Mary, Queen of Scots, is released in the UK today, with big names such as Saoirse Ronan, Margaret Robbie and David Tennant starring. Following the success of Scottish historical films like Outlaw King last year, Linnea Lind and Olivia Hill tell us about the significance of Mary Stuart as a historical Scottish figure and why these films attract tourists to the country.
Queen Elizabeth, your cousin Mary has returned to take up her throne in Scotland.
The Queen!
Based on the life of Mary Stuart and her relationship with her cousin, Elizabeth I, the new film Mary, Queen of Scots is being released today across cinemas in the UK. Feature film debut for director Josie Rourke, the film stars big names such as Saoirse Ronan in the leading role as the Scottish Queen, alongside Margot Robbie as Elizabeth I. On Monday earlier this week, fans greeted stars at the Edinburgh premiere. Olivia Hill was there to catch the action.
I'm here outside the Cameo Picture House, where Saoirse Ronan just greeted some excited fans before she headed inside for the premiere. Saoirse will be joined here tonight by her co-stars, James McArdle, Jack Lowden and director Josie Rourke, as well as Nicola Sturgeon, who is also expected to attend the screening. Earlier this evening, the cast attended a reception at Edinburgh Castle, where Mary Stuart stayed herself and gave birth to her only child, James VI of Scotland and First of England.
The film Mary Queen of Scots is based on the biography My Heart is My Own, The Life of Mary Queen of Scotland by John Guy. But who was she really? Mary Stuart was born on the 8th of December in 1542. She took on the throne after her father, James V of Scotland, died when she was just 6 days old. Anna Groundwater, teaching fellow in historical skills and methods at the University of Edinburgh, told us a little bit about Mary Stuart.
So Mary, as an infant, becomes Queen of Scotland. Because she's so young, she has regents ruling for her. But at the same time, the other thing that's happening is that the English are attacking Scotland because they want to impose English overlordship on Scotland, and they want to marry Mary to Henry Tudor, Henry VIII's son, Edward.
The film Mary, Queen of Scots follows Mary Stuart's return to Scotland after spending her childhood in France. Due to religious clashes between her and supporters of her son, James, Mary sought support from her cousin, Elizabeth I, in England.
Unfortunately, when the two forces meet, Mary's side loses comprehensively, and she's forced to flee across the border, across the Solway, into England, thinking that she's going to get help from her cousin Elizabeth, who's also a queen and who shouldn't be seen to be supporting a rebellion against another queen, because that would undermine her own position.
The challenges Mary faced throughout her life and the relationship between the two queens is explored in the new film. But what do Scottish films mean for the tourism industry? We spoke to Hamish Hutchinson, press officer for Visit Scotland, who told us about the influence of films set in Scotland.
Research shows that around 1 in 5 visitors are inspired to come to Scotland after seeing it on the big or small screen. So with that in mind, if they see Scotland and they see the fantastic imagery up on display, then that inspires them to maybe come to Scotland and maybe seek out those locations, but also just discover the surrounding area. For example, I know it's going back a little bit further, but Braveheart, when Braveheart came out, and then the Wallace Monument, saw the jump in number of visitors to the Wallace Monument on the back of that. People are coming here not just because of Scotland being Scotland and the landscape's history and the heritage, but also because they're inspired by fiction and, factual stuff they're seeing on screen.
Mary, Queen of Scots is just one of many films exploring Scotland's rich history, and hopefully its release will highlight what the country has to offer.
Lynn there reporting. The weather now, mostly sunshine and cloudy in most areas, with temperatures reaching 4 degrees. And a final recap of today's top stories. After a tumultuous week in Parliament, the path forward on Brexit seems to be more uncertain than ever, leaving Parliament and the public asking, what's next? The National Museum of Scotland held a Burns-themed event today for people living with dementia as part of a monthly programme to help those with the illness enjoy a social experience in a safe environment. and several high street chains facing closure leave the future of the high street shopping in jeopardy. Ian Four News, I'm Paul Sinclair.
This is Radio Energy, Edinburgh Napier Radio Group. Talk, tunes, tales, and talent from Edinburgh to you.